you're too busy to set goals, or if you're unsure what the right goals are for you, or if you're just not clear on what's next for you in your business and your life, I've got the solution you've been looking for. Join my free 7-day course designed for athletic-minded men who want to maximize their potential in business and life. And I'm going to help you create a clear plan for achieving your biggest goals faster. So if you feel like you're driving with the parking brake on, if you feel like you're going 100 miles an hour all day long, but not really moving the needle in your life, get started with me today. Get instant access to this 7-day course where you and I will get to interact live with each other. Plus, you'll have access to a community of like-minded, high-performing, athletic-minded, competitive men looking to unlock their next level as well. Just visit jimharshawjr.com/free. That's jimharshawjr.com/free.
Being successful and knowing how to handle success are two different things. You know, I can only speak for myself, but there have been in my younger ages when I was successful, I was not always mature enough or smart enough or wise enough to handle the success I was having. And I also didn't understand who were my friends and who weren't.
Welcome to another episode of Success for the Athletic Minded Man. Real talk on harnessing your athletic drive for clarity, consistency, and focus in business and life. This is your host, Jim Harsher Jr. And today I bring you Coach Bruce Babichan. Coach Bruce is a former successful senior level corporate executive who walked away from his success to chase his passion in becoming a world-renowned professional boxing trainer. And that's exactly what he is now. And he's also a speaker, leadership coach, as well as a boxing coach. And today in this episode, he shares a story that honestly sounds almost too wild to be true. And he gets right into it. I mean, right off the bat, we get right into this. The first thing we talk about. So imagine this, a young guy from a small town in Romania shows up at his gym outside of DC with nothing but a dream and a single phrase, two-word phrase in broken English, me, champion. That's it. And then over time, this unlikely partnership takes them to the brink of glory, facing some of the biggest names in boxing and aiming for world titles. But it's a cautionary tale, and he shares a deeper story here that gets me choked up, and Bruce as well, as he shares this. It's a story about ambition and grit, but also the dark side of having the wrong influences that can turn a dream into a nightmare. He dives into why success and handling success are two very different things, and how with the right environment, even the strongest people can be derailed. And the importance of having the right people in your life. You might not be a boxer, but if you ever wondered about the importance of process over goals, this episode is for you. Bruce's story is going to resonate with you. So stick around to hear as this young fighter shares this final phrase as he departs the country for Romania. Absolutely fascinating episode. Bruce is just one of my favorite people. We connected years and years ago. I had him on the podcast, and he continues to just inspire me. So super grateful to bring Bruce Babichan back on the show. All right, here we go. Let's get into it. My interview with Bruce Babichan. You had this crazy story about this kid who showed up at your doorstep, couldn't speak English, didn't have any money to speak of, but he just wanted to box. Tell me that story again.
So I was in the gym one Saturday working with one of the pros in the gym, and I noticed this guy came in the gym who was not clearly not dressed, you know, for the boxing gym. So I knew he was out of place, and he was trying to get my attention, but I was working. And so I'd look over, but I was still focused on the athlete I was working on. And the guy patiently waited, a little older guy, and eventually practice ended with that athlete. And I walked over, and he walked over to me, and I said, "Can I help you?" And he said, "Are you Coach Bruce?" I said, "I am Coach Bruce." He said, "I have a young man on the phone that would like to speak to you. Would you be willing to talk to him?" And this is like completely out of the blue with no preamble. So I said, "Sure." And he put me on the phone, and I looked down at the phone, and there was this handsome boy with his long eyelashes and with a big smile. And he started talking to me, you know, very fast and in an excited voice, but I couldn't understand one word he said. And, you know, I didn't want to be a jerk, so I waited a little bit till there was like a pause, and I handed the phone back to the man. I said, "You know, what's going on here? You know, what's happening?" He says, "Coach, this young man's asking that if he gets to your gym, will you train him? And I said, well, where does he live? He says he lives in a small town in Romania, and he wants to come to America to be a professional boxer. And I said, well, how'd he find me? He said, his coach had found me when I was coaching one of the U.S. teams abroad. I said, look, if he can get here, I'll train him and tell him that. And he said, and he looked in the phone, he said some words in Romanian, and the man thanked me and left. And that's the last I thought about it. About 7 months later, 7 or 8 months later, I'm in the gym and I look up and we have a little area where you walk in. There's a window that looks into the gym from like the vestibule. And I looked up and I saw this boy's face. I mean, I looked up and the moment I saw him, I recognized his face from the phone. And I looked and he looked at me and his big smile came across his face. And he came into the gym and he walked in. He was disheveled. He had shoe at his pinky toe where the pinky toe was all worn out. You know, his socks were gray. He had shorts on. He had a t-shirt that was raggedy, all stretched around the collar. He had a backpack, a tear in the bottom. And he walked up to me. He put his hand out and he said, me champion. So I looked at him. I said, well, we'll see. But I don't, you know, I didn't really know what to do. And so I said, is there anybody who, how do we communicate? So I realized I couldn't talk to him really. I couldn't communicate with him, but he was eager. I said, you know, how are we going to talk? So eventually he got that fella to come back in the next day. And we talked and it found out that this boy had saved up money for 7 months to buy a one-way ticket to the United States. He got off at the airport he thought was closest to my gym, which is right outside Washington, D.C. So he got off at this airport, Dulles. It took him a day and a half to get from Dulles Airport to my gym. He was telling me that story. And he showed up at the gym. He had no money and no plan, but the desire to be a fighter. I didn't ask him a lot of questions, but for the next couple of days, I said, well, just come to the gym. And every day I'd come to the gym in the morning and he would already be there. And I figured this kid's really eager. Come to find out he was sleeping outside the gym. And then he would wake up in the morning and come over and be the first one there. So I started training him. And eventually we found that he had a distant relative in the general area. And we talked to the relative and the relative said, well, he can stay here for a short period of time, which was nice. And we started training, and he was gifted. He was gifted. You know, he had the things, Jim, that you can't coach in. You can teach skills. You can teach certain things, but certain just, kinetic awareness and movement and understanding. And you know, so he had some gifts, and he was a really hard worker. He was a really good, sweet kid. But the uncle that he was staying with, this distant relative, did a little research. And he found out a little bit about what a boxer could make as a pro boxer who was successful. So he started aligning himself with now his nephew. So anyway, I was taking Alex and, you know, we were developing him and had him for a year or so and then got him, started getting him some fights in 1-0, 2-0, 3-0, 4-0, 5-0, 6-0, 7-0, 8-0. And he's winning. He's not winning. He's crushing people. You know, I was taking him around to different gyms to test him out. And I had him spar with, you know, Gervonta Davis and all kinds of Keyshawn, all the top guys in the world. And this kid was hanging in. And I was like, oh, my God. So we found somebody who would, you know, that, you know, the sport requires some investment in the athlete. And we found a gentleman who was very helpful, was helping him out financially. I eventually moved him into my house because he didn't have a place. And I eventually had him bring his wife and his daughter over to the United States because they wanted to come. And then they ended up staying in my house. I taught his daughter how to, you know, the alphabet, you know, and she was this beautiful little girl. All this time, this kid was in the gym training and we were building towards something. And I was doing it for all the right reasons, right? I was doing it because here was this kid that needed help, that he was responsive to the help that was being given to him. We were succeeding. He was coachable and all those things. So we are now at the level where he's beginning to fight for for some sizable belts and things like that. So our first, we were fighting for the IBF Intercontinental. We fought for the IBO International belt. He knocked a dude out in like three rounds. Then we fought for the IBF Intercontinental. He fought the guy who was the previous world champion and won that fight decisively. Then during this time, Jim, and I want everybody to hear this part of the story because it's a little bit of a cautionary tale. Being successful and knowing how to handle success are two different things. You know, I can only speak for myself, but there have been in my younger ages when I was successful, I was not always mature enough or smart enough or wise enough to handle the success I was having. And I also didn't understand who were my friends and who weren't. And I was always telling Alex, make sure you're hanging out with the right people. Because I am, coach. Don't worry about me. Don't worry about it. I got it. Okay. You're hanging out with the right people. Yes, sir. Hanging out with the right people. So one day I'm in the gym and now we're, you know, the training is serious and everything that we're looking at is serious. And I see Alex, I see him, and there's this other kid from Eastern Europe in there. And I go, what is this guy doing here in the gym? He goes, oh, he's a friend of mine. I go, well, how's he a friend of yours? He goes, oh, you know, he just says he's a friend. And guy came over. And the moment the guy came over, I felt uncomfortable. There was something about the guy that my instincts went up. And I just said, you know, Alex, I'm uncomfortable with this. Don't be hanging out with this guy. I got it. And since we didn't have a fight immediately scheduled, we were sort of in the gym working, but it wasn't that intense. He could, you know, so he started hanging out with this guy and they started hanging out with this guy's friends. And then he said, I'm going to go to New York for the weekend. I said, okay, you know, be careful. And what I realized, Jimmy, is that he was getting pulled in the wrong direction. So we fought one more time and we are now the mandatory challenger for the world title with Jerwin and Cejas for the IBF world title. He's ranked the number one challenger in the world in the IBF. He's the number one in the IBO. He's number like six in the... He's ranked in the top five in all the sanctioning bodies. I'm on the phone negotiating for his first world title fight with Jerwin and Cejas' people from the Philippines. So I'm on the phone negotiating his contract, and which takes a couple days, you know, a couple days to do. So we're in the discussions and I get a phone call from Alex's wife. Hi, she goes, Coach Bruce in Broken English. She goes, Alex in trouble. And I go, well, what's he in trouble? She goes, he's been arrested. He's in Virginia in trouble. And I go, well, what's he been arrested for? She said, I don't know. So I called a lawyer buddy of mine and they researched it. And he'd been arrested for credit card fraud. And so I drove down to Virginia, down to where he was in Southern Virginia. Long story short was these friends of his that he'd become friends with were stealing credit card. You know, when I think of credit card fraud, I think of like I steal your credit card and I use it before you know about it, right? Apparently what these guys do is they steal information. They make these chips and then they load these chips onto cards and then they have cards basically with other people's information. They use them until they're shut down. And the guys he was friends with were involved in the Wawa breach. These guys had breached Wawa, which is a convenience store all over the chain, giant breach. They were making gift cards and they were giving him cards. Like, you know, and I was telling him the whole time, I said, you're just their pet. You're just the champ. These guys want to go to dinner with you, be seen with you, want to hang out with you, but they're not your friends. We're your friends here. Be careful. I got it. And what they were doing was giving him these cards to use, and he was using them. And he got arrested because every single time you use the card, it's a separate account. A separate account, apparently, when you get charged. And the FBI had been following this group of guys that he was being friends with and tapped their phones and getting conversations with Alex. So this is a funny story. So I go down to the courthouse, Jim, and I'm walking across the parking lot into this courthouse in Southern Virginia. I'm talking about way down there, you know, 2-3 hours from where I live. And as I get out of my car, these other two guys across the parking lot get out of their car at the exact same time. And I start walking to this building, this place I'd never been before. And I can see that these guys aren't actually walking towards the building, but they're walking towards me. And I get out and I walk and I stop and I'm like maybe 15, 20 yards away. I said, can I help you guys? You know, what's going on here? The guy looks at me and goes, Mr. Babichan, like I'm totally taken back. I go, what? He goes, yeah, he goes, Special Agent Leak from the FBI. Could we speak to you? I go, what? And so we go in the back and they explain everything to me. That, you know, what has happened, this whole breakdown and everything like that. And this is how they knew my name because they were part of this phone tap. And I'm like totally out of my element. I'm totally freaked out. I'm Mr. Straight Down the Middle guy and here I am. And so now, and you know, and you live your life as a coach, you try and live with high ideals. And here I'm in this thing. And I'm worried for Alex. I'm uncomfortable with the whole situation. So anyway, we go through a process and eventually they come to find out that the state drops the case against Alex, but it was still reported to immigration. And we get a letter from immigration saying, you have to leave the country. You're being removed from the country. And I remember trying to figure out what to do with the world title fight. This has all happened simultaneously. And I realized I can't do anything about it. And so I let them know. And I remember driving Alex to the airport and on his final taking him away. And he looked over at me and this by now he's learned some English. And he looked over at me, he goes, did I kill my own? He said, did I kill my own dream? And I said, yeah, you killed your dream. And here's a kid who came from nothing with a pure heart, came over here, did everything right, got with the wrong people. It's a cautionary tale. Everywhere I go, when people ask, when I go speak in front of teams or whenever I'm asked to come talk to different college programs, I talk about decisions. I talk about the choices we make, you know, how you have to make the right choices and surrounding yourself with the right people. And the consequences, and sometimes our, you know, we don't think of these. This happened. This is real.
That's not, it sounds like a movie. It's freaking real.
Yeah. I mean, this kid, the rags to riches. We are in the riches discussion. And his daughter had grown up here. She no longer really spoke Romanian. She spoke English. They had to pick and they had to transplant him. I stay in touch with Alex. He's trying to get back in the United States. I try and help them, but you know, like anything else in life, Jim, there's a, when you're climbing to the top, especially in sports, there's a window of opportunity. And sometimes not only have you climbed, but the window's open for you. The circumstances are right. The conditions are right. You know, the moment is right.
Preparation meets opportunity.
Yeah. And just, you know, there's a window for you and your style and the person you are to slip through that window. And I talked to him not too long ago, and he goes, you know, I want to come back. I said, you're 5 years older, son. You haven't fought in 5 years. You know, I don't want to, you know, crush your dream or anything, but I don't think that's going to happen. I said, I will start back at the beginning. If I say, if you get here, I'll train you. But I don't think that right now the window of opportunity is the same. You know, he's older. The athletes have changed. The circumstances have changed. It is a much more difficult path.
Quick interruption. Hey, if you like what you're hearing, be sure to get the notes, quotes, and links in the action plan from this episode. Just go to jimharshawjr.com/action. That's jimharshawjr.com/action to get your free copy of the action plan. Now, back to the show.
Wow. Bruce, what a freaking story. Holy mackerel. I mean, literally like straight out of a movie. So I want to take this story and overlay this on top of the life of the listeners. Because the listener's saying, you know, I've got good friends and these are good people and I'm not doing credit card theft and nothing like that. But I think the lesson for all of us is what we just heard from Bruce is this story that is like stark contrast of like what could have been and then how these people drug the champ down. But for you, the listener, it may not be so stark. You're around people who don't have the same goals as you. They may not be bad people. They're good people and good members of the community, and that's all well and good. Do they have the same goals? Do they have the same standards as not just you have right now, but where you want to go? So Alex came into the sphere of influence of Bruce Babichan, a coach with high standards, had everything that this kid needed, and he gravitated up. He was pulled up because he was in the right environment. And Bruce, we call this the environment of excellence in my coaching program. This kid got pulled up, and then this gravitational force that pulled him down on the other side, the bad people. For the listener, you have to be very intentional about you. It's like there are things that you want in the world, right? Maybe you want to make $1 million, improve your marriage, lose that 30 pounds, run the marathon, ultraman, whatever that thing is. If you are not in the sphere of influence of other people who hold the same values and same standards, you're not going to get there.
Yeah. Yeah. I'm listening to you, and I want to sort of overlay something in this because it's part of what I try and communicate to all the athletes. I'm working with a kid right now who's an extraordinary talent. It's Dusty Harris. He's 37-0. We should be fighting for the world title soon.
Wow. Dusty Harris. Mark that name.
Dusty Harrison. Yeah, Dusty Harrison. Everything in life is a process. And part of process, you know, people think of process as A, B, C, D, and E. That's part of process. But all part of your process is who you choose to associate with, who you choose to have in your life, who you choose to be around. That creates the environment in which your process exists. And when you get people, when you have people in your life, and I tell the athletes this all the time, you know, you come in here, we have a very definite way of doing things, and we have a very specific process for everything. Part of your process is to put yourself in the absolute right environment to achieve at the level. Most people, what they do is they have a couple friends or they have a couple things that are these distractions that are outside, and they feel they can manage those things. And it's been my life experience that to be the best at something or to be extraordinary at something, you have to have a very monocular view of things, a very sort of the more single-minded you are, the more things you exclude from your life, the more things that you can have in your life. And one of the things you have to exclude in your life or to relationships that do not serve you. And we all have friends that we love and that are dear to us that don't serve our greater good. They don't, you know, we have relationships. We may have pre-existing relationships with people who are great people, nice guys, whatever, nice gals, whatever it is, but they don't serve our purpose. They're not in our process. They're not currently involved in our process. And if we don't get them, listen, you can fool yourself and feel like, you know, not me. The not me syndrome has ruined more athletes than I could think of anything else. It's not going to happen to me. I can manage it. I can deal with it. But every great overachiever has a monocular view, and they do put people out of their lives who aren't, you know, going to help them attain at the level that they're trying to attain. And if not, what you have is you have incongruencies in your, you know, when you look at a guy and you look at somebody and say, you know, am I doing what I need to achieve at the level I'm seeking to achieve? There's all these incongruencies. There's incongruencies in the relationship. There's incongruencies. I want to be the world champion, but my behavior is a certain way. I want to be a world champion, but I'm hanging out with bums and losers. I want to do this. And there's all kinds of these incongruencies. And all of them say the same thing. That's not that important. I can manage it. You can't manage it. You know, I had a conversation with Lee Kemp. You remember, you know, Lee, I'm bringing it up for Lee. Lee was talking one time and just telling me how exclusionary success is and how, you know, you think you're going to get to the top and you're going to, he says, there is an element of loneliness associated with it. And I don't mean loneliness of feeling longing in your heart, but I mean loneliness in the sense that you can't drag a lot of people with you in extraordinary ventures. Most people don't have that type of mindset. You have to leave people behind on your journey. And being unable to do that, having that, what you consider a good heart, is really keeping you tethered to people who can't serve your goal and your purpose. And that's where you have to have wisdom, and you have to make hard choices, and you have to decide what's really important to me. What is important to me? And if you're unwilling to separate yourself from the people in your life that are not congruent with your goal or not going to help you get your goal, at this stage in my career and when I'm dealing with adults, I lose sympathy. I lose sympathy. I just say, listen, I'm going to tell you exactly what you need to do. And you can do that or you can choose not to do that. But if you choose not to do that and it doesn't happen for you, I lose sympathy. If you're going to do it now, you know, we can do everything right. And you know this better than anything. Doing everything right does not guarantee success. You know, it's one of the hard things in life, but it does guarantee self-respect. It does guarantee the sense of honor and pride that you gain from totally devoting yourself to something. I think the highest expression of a person's life besides family is their ability and their devotion to something. And most people, when I say this, I say this to my athletes, when I say devotion, I'm not talking about the Bible, whatever that relationship is. I'm talking about the spiritual nature of devotion, and that there is something when you fully dedicate and sacrifice your life and you devote yourself to something, there is a spiritual component that changes you as a person, that changes the way that you go about things, the way that you navigate. And that is part of the incredible value proposition of seeking high goals and seeking the highest things to attain. Some people don't have high goals. Some people don't know how to set goals properly. I think I mentioned this to you earlier. Most people set goals. They set a long-term goal and they focus on it daily, and that's the exact wrong way to achieve a goal. You know, goals and outcomes are distractions, right? They distract you from what you're supposed to do. I remember this years before, this is about 35 years ago, and before I was coaching full-time, I got this job and I was working in this corporation, and the guy that brought me in was my mentor. He came in at that place and he said, you know, what's your goal, Bruce? And I said, I want to be rookie of the year, you know, and he goes, that's a great goal. And he goes, did you write it down? Did you put it up on your desk? You're going to be rookie of the year. He said, I go, yeah, I did all that, because that was like the mantra of the time, you know, write your goal down, vision boards. He says, all that does, Bruce, is distract you. And I go, what do you mean? He goes, every time you're looking at that, you're not thinking about what you need to be doing right now at this very moment to attain that goal. He said, here's what you need to do. He said, I want you to write down, I want you to work in reverse. I want you to set a goal, then I want you to work in reverse. How many calls do you need to make to get a meeting? How many meetings do you need to make to get a sale? Right? Broke it down like this. And he said, every day your goal is not to look at that rookie of the year thing that you want to attain. Your goal is to look down at that blank sheet of paper and turn it into 100 phone calls. And then the next day, your goal was to turn that into 100 phone calls and to get one meeting. And then when you get 5 meetings, your goal is to turn one of those meetings into one sale. He goes, if you do that for the next 2 years, you'll be the rookie of the year. Or the next year, you'll be the rookie of the year. And that's what I did. You know, I used to go to the library. I used to go to the public library every morning. This is before the internet. And I'd get these. God, that's incredible to say yeah. That. I feel so old when I say that. Get these reference books and I would write down these lists and I would go in. And Jim, I had these little white square pieces of paper that I cut up, you know, and I would just hash them up. Phone call, you know, making phone calls, getting meetings, getting things, you know, crushing it. And he was the first guy that made me understand or made me aware that setting goals is great, but focusing on the long term when you're in the daily process is exactly how you fail. And so my athletes, I say, what's the goal? I want to be the national champion this year in amateur boxing. I have like 3 kids. They all want to be national champions. Okay, great. Let's be national champions. I said, now how are we going to achieve that? Well, what do you think? And I said, okay, well, here's what we're going to do. Here's your workout. And every day we're going to come in and our goal is a daily goal. We don't think about we don't spend our time thinking about nationals or going to regional. We don't think about that. We don't talk about that. We don't talk about the outcome of your next fight. We talk about what we are doing today. What are we doing today? How far are you running? What's your time today? When you're doing your conditioning coach, what's that like today? How many rounds are we putting in today and how hard did we work? How many rounds of sparring today are we doing or whatever it happens to be doing? And we focus on the daily. And the more that, and this has just been my life experience, the more that my athletes look into the future, and I share this whenever anybody asks me, but the more that, you know, people set goals incorrectly all the time. And we all do. You know, I have the dream. I want to do this. I want to do that. And I'm constant. How many times have you run across somebody? It just tells you, man, I have, I have these dreams. I want to do this. I have so much more. I want to be so much more. I can do so much more. And they ruminate about it. They ruminate on it. And they think, because they're told, no, disrespect or anything to anybody who has a different philosophy, but when you sit around and only think about the end of your goal, you're totally distracted from the process that allows you to achieve. I remember listening to John Wooden give a talk one time, and he was talking about how he never mentions winning. I remember early in my career when I was coaching how important it was. I wanted to develop a philosophy and a thought process, and I started listening to these great coaches, and I started realizing the fact that they were all saying it similarly, but in different ways. You know, they would all say it that the outcome is the distraction.
Yeah, that's. I mean, I've seen that so many times too, and I've seen it in my own life and my own wrestling career. My senior year, the moment that I got out of my own freaking way wrestling was the moment I gave up on the outcome. I said, "We all know what we want. I want to be on top of the podium at the national championships." You got athletes who want to be national champions. You know, the listener, you want to build the business, quit your job, make the career change, lose the weight, heal your marriage, whatever that thing is. Like, you know what that is. Stephen Covey, Seven Habits of Highly Effective People, told us, start with the end in mind, right? You start there, you figure out the process, then you focus on the process, not the outcome. And for me, the turning point was the moment in the hotel room the night before my first competition, my senior year, when I said, something about what I'm doing is not working. Something about what I'm doing is not working. I am going to give up on the outcome. I'm only going to focus on doing everything I can possibly do. And like you said earlier, Bruce, it doesn't guarantee success. But in that moment, I allowed myself to let go of the outcome, focus on the process. I said, I'm going to show up to practice early, stay late, rehab my injuries, put the right food in my body, go to bed on time, take care of my injuries, all that stuff, like take care of my academics. And if I do all of those things, I give myself the best chance. And then I let go. It's this freedom to actually go out and perform and to do the thing that you need to do day in and day out. And this is focusing on the process, not the outcome.
Yeah, I think that whenever I get a chance to talk to other coaches or if I'm asked to, one of the things I try and stress to is that, especially the young coaches, is that process is many things. And our job as coaches and our job as leaders is to not only be successful, but to teach how to be successful. And when I see a program that is poorly run, or I see a business that's poorly run, oftentimes it boils down to leadership. And I feel sad, though, for athletes in poorly run programs, not because they're on crappy teams, but when I was a boy, I was immersed in something. Well, I grew up at the Silver Spring Boys Club right outside Washington, D.C., and everything had a process. It was just highly organized. And even at 75-pound football, practice was a certain way. It was run a certain way. Everything had a process. I didn't realize that I was learning that. I was just in it. I was just in it. And when I got to high school and my high school football coach, I said, this dude is brilliant, man. And we end up winning state and being a great team. We had a process. Everything. And I didn't realize I was learning that. I was just in it. And when you're in a bad team, you're not learning one of the most important things that leaders are supposed to teach is how to be successful. And every great coach that I've ever come across or that I study or that I admire or that I try and emulate, it's all process driven. And then when the athletes leave, you know, like this is the thing when you see coaching trees, right? You see a Joe Gibbs coaching tree or the Bill Walsh coaching tree or the Don Coryell coaching tree. They have philosophies. They have all kinds of schemes and stuff. We've all, right? But they all have process. They're all process. And everybody takes that process. That's why I think in large part, a coach like Nick Saban, look at his coaching tree. Look at the guys that come out of that tree. This guy Cignetti over there in Indiana right now who's crushing it. He came out of that tree. They're not smarter than everybody else. That's not the only place in the country where genius football coaches come from. But what they do have is they are disciples of a process. Now they put their own spin on it. And I think when you're a leader or if you're a coach, the most important thing you can teach about the process of being successful is immerse kids in a process so they understand how to win. Emphasize it as they're going through it. let them know what they're supposed to be learning. It's not just, I want you to do the drill this way, I want you to do the technique this way. It's the process. I'm putting you in a process. And when you learn how to build process, you can take that process and start a business. And you will know that the most important thing about being successful in that business is process orientation. What is the process for every person in your company? What is the process for every person in your gym or in your team? The better the process, the better the outcome. And yet it's natural for all of us. You were saying, you do it, I do it, we all do it. Is to constantly think about the result, constantly. You know what I mean? Now, you know, visualization boards and all that kind of stuff. I love the idea that you can join with the universe and you can metaphysically connect. I'm open to all things. And I love that kind of thing. I love that kind of conversation. But I also know that ideas without process are just dreams. They just stay out there in the ether and they frustrate the hell out of you. And the last thing I'll say here is that oftentimes, one of the great things about sports that's a little different than life is that people have this notion, I have this notion, say, no, I'm a hard worker, man. I mean, nobody can outwork me. That's what I say. I say, if you and I, Jim, are going to do a competition and we're serious about it, the one check I put in my column is I'm going to outwork you. Now, you might put the same check in. That's cool. And that's what makes for a good thing. But I say, I'm putting that check. I'm going to outwork this dude. There's no. Now, I can beat anybody with work, right? I can win. This is the common sort of flawed thinking that happens, at least with my athletes. I can do anything, coach, if you just tell me exactly how to do it before I get started. And I say to the athletes, I said, you don't want to know exactly how to. Here's what you do. The first thing you do is show up to practice on time. That's the very first thing. You overlook that, I can't get you to the end. You show up for practice on time. You lace your gloves a certain way. You put your shoes on a certain way. We train a certain way. We have a certain way of hitting the bag. We have a certain way of working the wall. We have a certain way of I have a certain way of entering the ring. Everything has a process. The more you focus on process, the process is the way. That's, you know what I'm saying? The process is the way. And people get caught up in tricks and the latest this and that. And I said, no, man. It's how you get in the ring every day. It's how you tie your shoes every day. It's how you train every day. The very first, when kids come into my gym to join the gym, I tell them all the same thing. I want you to watch practice today, and I tell them a time to leave. Normally, I say, okay, you can watch practice, and I want you to leave at 7:15, and then you can come back the next day and see if, you know, try it out, and we'll see if you fit into the culture here. And I tell the kids, if you leave at 7:14 and 59 seconds, don't come back. I will know about it. I won't say anything to you, okay? But I'll know about it, and I'll know the kind of kid you are, and I don't want that kind of kid in here. Not because I don't like you, because I don't want you affecting that kid over there. If I say leave at 7:15, you leave at 7:15 or thereafter, right? And those things seem like to people, he's being excessively difficult. But really what I'm trying to do from the beginning is put that kid into a process. And then my great goal at the end of all of this, when I have an athlete, because most of my athletes, like every sport, the overwhelming number of athletes aren't going to achieve at a high level, you know, in the sport. But what is the thing? Is that it then? And they did it? Or what do they leave with that makes that experience incredibly valuable to their life? If you push them, they learn with some self-confidence, some self-respect. But equally important is they've learned how to be successful. They learned how to be a success. And they can take that and do their own, you know, they can start a roofing company. They can start an internet company. When you're doing that kind of thing, you're coaching the shit out of kids. Now you're really coaching. And to me, process is king. Process is king.
Bruce, for the listener who is bought in and wants to take action on this, what's something they can do in the next 24 to 48 hours to start taking action on what you're teaching here today?
So I'm actually revamping my program right now. And the exercise that I'm doing right now is I am starting with what is my desired outcome. I'm talking about my specific desired outcome. And then I start mapping backwards exactly what it is that I have to do for my kids to attain that. So for my local program, it's to win the team trophy and the Golden Gloves. For the Nationals, it's for us to go on and win that. So what I do is I begin to map backwards, and I get as granular as I possibly can. I wish I could show you something on the screen. I just did an infographic that I'm going to be showing the kids that shows them the five steps that we're going to be going through in this program. I tell them, this is how the program is being designed. This is how it's going to be designed. So what I do is I sit down. It's an exercise. It's not a 10-minute exercise. It's not a 15 minutes. This is a process that causes you to think into it. It may take you a month of deconstructing the goal that you have and breaking it down into bigger goals, smaller goals, actionable goals, daily steps. The other thing is that I encourage everybody to do this, is to open a Word document, and whenever the mood strikes you, start putting down what you believe is your philosophy. Don't go to ChatGPT. I love ChatGPT, but not for this, right? It's to start putting down your philosophy and think into what your philosophy is. In that exercise, a lot of people come to realize and think things about that they're not aware of. They become a little more self-aware. Deconstruct your goal. Start with the big goal. Break it down into smaller and smaller pieces till you've gotten it down to daily actionable steps. And then those daily actionable steps into the minutes.
Bruce, for the listener who wants to find you, follow you, learn more about you, et cetera, where can they do that?
I'm on Instagram as Your Corner Man. I'm on, you can go to www.yourcornerman.com. Jim, besides what I do on coaching, I do some speaking when I get the opportunity or when I get the chance. I have the moment in the schedule. I love to do that. I love to do more of that. I have a website that sort of speaks to that part of my life a little bit more. It's yourcornerman.com. The boxing and the fighting side, you can go to Instagram. But I'm not prolific on social media. I
do love your stuff, though, man. When you post and when it's you and you're sharing messages like you're sharing here today, is gold. It's the dose of social media that people actually need as opposed to other garbage out there.
I don't know how to get, popular. You know what I mean? Yeah.
Just be you, man. It's good. We need more of you out there. So, Bruce, thank you so much for the lessons. Thanks for coming back on. It's been way too long, and it's really glad to reconnect, man.
Yeah, it is, Jim, and I just want to congratulate you on success. I've got to watch you from the beginning to where you are now, and I know you're not anywhere near the end of where you're at, but I just want to say I love watching people start with an idea, develop it, and become successful. I've watched you from afar. I'm happy for you, and I admire you for it.
Well, the feeling's mutual. I appreciate you. Thanks,
Bruce. Okay, brother. I'll talk to you soon.